Welcome to Doing It Bubba Style, the number one rated, internationally syndicated motorsports show. Brought to you by the award-winning father and son car building team and the hosts of the show, Bubba and Tom.
Well, there it is. And there it is, Bub. Good morning. It's Saturday morning, man. Our first time back in a month. How you doing today?
Doing pretty good, man. Just been steady working away this morning, getting a lot of stuff done and caught up. A lot of designs going, man, here at BEM.
There's a lot of stuff going on here at BEM right now, isn't there, Bub?
Yeah.
Big steps forward into the future, man, huh?
Yep.
A lot of crazy stuff, man. We've got a lot of ground to cover today, Bub. We did roll it back because we've got so much going on. Once a month, we're right here, the number one rated internationally syndicated motorsports show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for making it such. NBC released a press release this week, Bub. We broke 10.3 million listeners worldwide. We talked about that yesterday on the Daily Live show, man. How incredible is that, brother?
Yeah, pretty good stuff, man.
You're an amazing guy, Bub. Everything you do is so amazing. A lot of big news coming out of BEM today. A lot of great things we're going to be talking about today. Good morning, Bub. This episode's brought to you by Bubba's Exotic Motorsports. That's bubbasexoticmotorsports.com. You guys got to check out what's out on Instagram. You'll see, Bub, the baseball season just wrapped up. One of your very good friends, the most sought-after man in Major League Baseball, Mr. Derek Dietrich, was here with you, and Logan Morrison was here with you Thursday and Friday, you saw his brand new Audi. In fact, you were working on it. Tell us about that, man.
So, yeah, man, it's, that's just one of those, great things that, you know, when you reach a certain status, of course, there are people that reach out to you. Everybody wants to align themselves with you when you hit a certain point. And that is what Audi does with guys like Derek Dietrich. He's super, super, super well known and making his way to the top of the Major League Baseball career and industry, absolutely dominating it. And that is why he was offered an opportunity to have one of the first 300 in the States of the Audi R8 V10. So for the 2019 model year. So he's got it. He got his hands on one. And of course, where does he go right when he gets it? Straight to BEM for some serious mods.
And it was, excuse me, Bob. It was crazy to watch you guys work on that. It's a moment of great pride when you see stuff like that going on.
Yeah.
Just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of good things going on, man. It's, we took that thing in. And of course, it's the car was technically what you would call a triple black setup. So everything on the car was blacked out. Everything from the wheels to the exterior of it to the interior of it. But at the same point in time, even though you still get it and consider it that triple black, it comes, of course, with all of your bright accenting. All the lenses and stuff are all DOT approved. So they're all the bright amber, the yellowish color on the side marker lights, the red in the rear, things that have to be the way they have to be when they leave the dealerships and manufacturers, for DOT compliance and state legalities, right? So you got to make sure that all that stuff is on there. All the chrome emblems, that stuff has got to go. So we completely went through, murdered this car out, and, well, time to step it up another notch with some serious power tuning and some insane exhaust systems.
Man, crazy, 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 man. Absolutely crazy. Hey, Bub, this man walked into a bank and robbed that he robbed, and he took some hostages, right? Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Did you hear about that? He asked the first hostages if he saw him rob the bank. And when the hostage said, yeah, he shot him right in the head. Walks up to the second guy, Bub, and he asks this guy, did you see me rob the bank? And the guy said, no, but my wife did.
Yeah, I got it.
Pretty clever, huh?
I got it.
How about that, Bub?
Was that your joke? That was it?
That wasn't a bad one, right?
I don't know, dude. It kind of flatlined right out of the gate.
Bub, there's so much stuff going on. We're going to be talking about gear ratios, coolant principles, rubber evolution, electric Porsches, and more, man.
Did you just say rubber?
Rubber
evolution.
Miss Outlaw Boutique, the moose is loose. Robin and Layla exclusively on the web, man, doing that stuff, man. Tell us what's going on over at the boutique, Bub.
Yeah, man, just, killing it with some trendsetting designs and fashion and accessories and apparel. And, Miss Outlaw Boutique's just got it on fire, dude. Everything from, the designs that they're doing to literally their collections now getting into fall time.
Yeah.
Especially down here in South Florida, it's hard to put that fall stuff together because it is so hot. So she puts that flair of what works in the temperature for South Florida for all these girls down here but also has that seasonal fall flair and feel to it, so that it makes you feel like you're somewhere else, even though you are down here when it is still 85 degrees outside.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. Good morning to the BEM dirt track driver, Mr. Mark Hoffman. He'll be calling in from 9:20, 9:25 to 9:25 with the BEM race report. A lot going on there, Bub. Got some surprising news for you. Your brother Matt is on his way over from Tampa, and
attaboy.
We'll see him in 3.5 hours. Come on home, Matt.
Come on, dude. There's
waiting
no chance
for it, baby.
It's gonna wind up being somehow tomorrow morning he'll wind
over.
Up getting here.
It's all over when the boys get together, Bub. And speaking of things being over when the boys get together, Bub, our very good friend, Mr. Paul Sr., will be here at BEM headquarters. I think Wednesday we pick him up at the airport. Bub, big announcement. Share with the world what's going on with BEM and Orange County Choppers, please.
So, yeah, man. So only going to get some limited stuff going on here, but you guys are going to have to stay tuned for it, especially on the social media feed. That's where you'll see a lot of the stuff releasing. But there is some incredible stuff going on behind the scenes right now with Bubba's Exotic Motorsports, BEM, and Orange County Choppers, OCC, up in New York. Stay tuned for that. You might want to sit down, get ready to watch all of the American Chopper series, and stay tuned for what's getting ready to drop out of that combo.
Sure enough, Bub, it's going to be the senior series. We're going to follow up a little bit on it, where we will be unveiling those bikes at the Monster Energy
Center. See, I told you, there's no chance that Matt is driving right now if he's watching us on here.
He absolutely is, because he's got his girlfriend Ashley driving.
Oh, that a boy.
Ashley Stryker, his dog, is driving. Doodledee is driving the Chevy on the way home.
I could see that.
That'd be funny, man. Can you see Doodledee with a cigar hanging out of his mouth and a chauffeur's cap on? His paws are up there going like this.
Yeah.
He's like, don't mind me, Dad. I've got the window down to clear the cigar smoke.
Just howling at the windshield.
The Senior Series choppers are getting ready to be released, ladies and gentlemen. Bub's going to tell you exactly what they are. We have some involvement with that, and you will be coming to see us at the Exotics on Los Alas. That's Exotics on L-A-S-O-L-A-S. In, let's see, Fort Loudy, Bub, on November the 11th, we will be in the Monster Energy tent with BEM cars and the Senior Series choppers out there. Bub, tell everybody what the Senior Series choppers are and why they should come to the unveil with us.
All right, so listen, man. So everybody knows that, you know, when you talk motorcycles in the industry, you have your manufacturer stuff, but you also have your very high-end, well-known name brand kings out there. You know, the guys like Billy Lane, the guys like Paul Tuttle Sr., Paul Tuttle Jr., Jesse James. You know, you have these massive major builders out there, the Martin brothers, Eddie Trotta, you know, these huge names out there. And these were guys that all back in the mid-2000s, they built an industry that was considered the chopper industry. And that took over everything. It took over the motorcycle industry in itself. Everybody wanted one. Everybody had to have one.
Yep.
There were people that would buy and sell and trade their souls to get one of these things. They would trade their family car to get their hands on something like this,
sure,
right?
Would, man.
You know, and it was, that's how much strength these guys put into the industry. And there were times where these bikes were pushing north of six figures all day long just to get one custom built, custom ordered, and they would take years to build. They were all one off. The airbrushing and the paint designs on them were absolutely insane from some of these artists out there. And it really made the industry blow, you know, it blew it up huge to a point where it got so big that, of course, everything that big has to eventually flatline and come back down. And that happened. That happened over the past few years. But now it is back on that peak again. It's coming up. It's coming up real strong. Now, what do? You want to capitalize on all of that out there. So you want to be able to take an industry that you obviously know worked. It worked perfect. What didn't work about that industry was your average guy couldn't play in it.
That's correct, Bub.
And
here it comes.
That is where most people want to get their hands on these things. And granted, it's you're building these, every one of these bikes you build is a piece of art. Well, now if you can make that affordable for your average guy to purchase, say somewhere in the lines of $20,000 to $30,000 range for these bikes, you're gonna have something that you not only make available to everyone, but you dominate another corner of that industry. So you start the industry and craze back up, because you've made it affordable and you're bringing out what people want and it's not out of reach for the average guy.
So, Bub, that's what we're going to be doing with the Orange County Choppers, the Senior Series bikes, and we will be unveiling them at the Exotics on Los Alas in Fort Lauderdale. Huge, huge show. We'll be headlining that event with the Tuttles on November the 11th. And, of course, Bub, with any design challenges, you know, it always appears simple on the surface, but it's not quite that way when you dig into it, is it, man?
No, not at all.
I've watched you and Senior and the crew up at OCC go back and forth 50 times with pictures and ideas and things like that behind the scenes for the last month. The first prototype has been test ridden, and it's been on the road.
Yeah, man. So again, this is it's something you guys are going to want to look forward to. Sure. If you are bike guys and bike lovers, girls out there, maybe that's something that you've always wanted, is to be able to not only just have a really cool bike. Of course, Harley Davidson is, you know, from the American side, still holding it down to today's standards. And it's still like one of those iconic things that there are people out there every day wishing that one day they could walk into a Harley dealer and purchase their first brand new Harley Davidson. There's also that same amount of people out there that are saying, you know, one day I wish I could walk into Orange County Choppers and own an OCC build, right?
Isn't that crazy?
And that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yep.
You're going to be able to get any of the Senior Series lines, both in a softtail and a hardtail style design. There's going to be, you know, paint choices and color options. And then it's literally going to be all the same design, whether, you know, from a mechanical drivetrain, so
yep.
engine, transmission, all of that stuff will all be the same. So these are going to be mass production bikes that are literally per order. You just go in, you place the order, financing options will be available, and it makes it that much nicer to be able to own a bike like that that's custom built to your spec for an affordable price. That, for Christ's sakes, if you don't even have 30 grand to throw out and you go and get finance and you pay a couple hundred bucks a month.
Are you willing, Bub, to talk about, before we move into the next section, what the gear, what the engine and transmission combination is going to be?
So, yeah, so it's going to be built off an S&S panhead style motor. So it's going to be a modern motor, but has the vintage style to it, and it's going to be fully reliable, still a carbureted application. Possible potential of going fuel injected on that here in the future.
I know you guys
on
are
those
talking
things
about that.
But it is also rocking a 5-speed transmission, so you do have that fifth gear for that highway cruise, even though it's going to have that vintage-style look. It will have a kickstart on it if you want that, but also be accompanied by an electric start that's going to be your primary use.
Right on, man. How
so
about
it's,
that?
I mean, it's a super, super cool combo, so it's going to have that vintage-style look, the retro look, but that modern feel to it. Exactly how we build here at BEM.
So when we tell you, ladies and gentlemen, around the world that a lot of great things are going on, trust me, this week we were notified, there was a press release coming out of NBC, CBS, and ABC. It hit all the wires, Bub. 10.325 million listeners around the world. The marriage of BEM and Orange County Choppers together. Robin's out there saying she's very excited. So cool. Well, you've certainly seen this going on behind the scenes. Thank you for being there as such a supporter. Jack Bias up in Canada. Good morning, my friend. You are a chopper guy. How is everything going up there? Mark Hoffman says the bike will be at Daytona. The bikes will not only be at Daytona, Mark, this will be an official sales outlet and a build outlet. In fact, there is going to be, Bob and I are looking at potentially relocating the business to a larger area where we can have a complete build facility, sort of like OCC, Bob. So there's a lot of things going on. Hometown girl on a hometown bike. Yes, Robin is from, Bob, Newburgh, New York.
That's right.
Which is where OCC headquarters is.
Yeah, sometimes I don't know what it is you're looking for out of
in
an
fact,
answer.
The cafe window.
You just flatline in the middle of your sentence and expect me to finish it.
The cafe window right there, Bub, where the cafe is, you know, you've spent plenty of times at OCC headquarters. When you look out that window, you're looking directly across at Robin's grandmother's property.
That's right.
It's crazy how the world goes around, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's on the way home. That's not going to be good tonight, is it, Bub?
Yeah, we'll have to see what's going on.
Holy smokes, man.
Yeah.
The family's going to be together. Doodle D's is going to wear his chauffeur's cap, his cigar. Maybe he'll be smoking a pipe this time, and he's going to chauffeur us all around, Bub.
He might.
Gear ratios, Bub. Tell me about gear ratios. What are they?
So that was something, and again, man, it's crazy how the more you move forward with technology, the more things just start falling off, right? So gear ratios. When you were talking muscle cars, performance cars from the 50s, all, and I'm talking like early Thunderbirds, things like that, 50s all the way through the, I'm going to go mid-2000s. There was a serious, serious usage of the words gear ratios a lot. Anytime you had
exactly.
a performance-based vehicle, you talked about gear ratios. What's the rear gear ratio? Blah, blah, blah. And I'll take this deep here in a second. But the gear ratios essentially are a ring and a pinion-style gear that mesh together. They work hand-in-hand. One is larger than the other. They both have different spline gears on them, and they mesh together to essentially generate how fast your engine RPM and torque and revolutions through your drive shaft and drivetrain are going to rotate down through. And I'm trying to dumb this down as much as I can.
No,
rotate down to the tires. So you can have like a lower gear ratio number. So something in like a 2 series, a 273, 288, those numbers are going to be a very long gear ratio. So for example, you'll feel as if you go to accelerate that car, it has a, what you would feel like an overly drawn out. So it's like, it's a very long time to get to the, your next gear, first to second, second to third. You could go to a shorter gear ratio, and then you go to like a high 3 series, a low 4 series, 410s, 373s, that's going to be a much shorter gear ratio. So it's going to be a much quicker acceleration.
Interesting.
So that is the easiest way that I could probably dumb that down. And the reason I mentioned that there was a long time from the 50s to like the mid 2000s, that stuff was really thrown around, is because there was a lot of guys out there looking for different things. Now, today's world, let's talk today, 2018, gear ratios are, to say that term is almost really very limited anymore. That's not a daily in the industry, where it used to be something that was a daily in the industry. It's not a common thing you bring up at car shows. These cars are coming built to spec out of the manufacturers. I'm talking modern cars, today's cars, where they are pre-built, pre-matched, and peak efficiency of proper gear ratio in the rear versus the transmission output and gear ratios. All of these things are pre-built and tested spot on to the T. So there is very limited time anymore that people will literally go out and change what is known as your gear ratio.
So, Bob, kind of to your point, it's weird. I literally, what's in your head, I have to go out and do research on, right?
Right.
So, for example, what you were just saying, the higher the gear ratio number, the lower the gearing. Thus, a 373 combo becomes a 400 if you add a couple teeth, right?
Right.
Every time the gear ratio number goes up, you lessen top speed, but increase acceleration. Conversely, if you want to mellow the engine, engine's hip, and increase the speed in each gear, you should seek a smaller gear ratio number.
Right. So essentially what you get is, in summary, higher numbers. So high three series, you know, going into the four series, those are going to get you a quicker acceleration out of the hole faster. So maybe you want a car that launches quicker, 0 to 60 times, 0 to 80 times. Those are going to do that. But on the backside, the quicker you're getting out of the hole in that style gear ratio, the shorter your top speed is going to be. So say your car was a top speed of 150 at 5,000 RPM, what the motor can handle, that may drop it down to 135, 138, 140. So you're going to lose some of your top speed to get a quicker, you know, out of the hole, 0 to 60, 0 to 80, 0 to 100 time. But also the same goes if you go to a longer ratio. So if you go to a lower number, you're going to have a very long, maybe a car that, there are cars that do need longer gear ratios because either they have too much horsepower, they build up real strong, so you don't want that short ratio. So you're going to really increase your top speed as well.
So, Bob, let me ask you a question. Then how do you, and this is what the world kind of wants to know, how do you as a designer, for example, on your cars, or when you're talking to Paul Sr. and you're saying, this is how we want this bike to run. And motorcycles, I assume, are the same in gear ratios. You're just using teeth on a sprocket. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. Teeth on a sprocket is the way you change it.
Okay. So how do you then, Bub, as a designer, decide?
By the way, much easier too.
Oh, bikes are?
Way easier.
You've always had your hands in building bikes. You love motorcycles.
There's no meshing or shimming or doing backlashes or anything like that there is on an automotive use. It's literally a belt. It is a primary sprocket, which is at your wheel, and then you have a sprocket at the transmission. So that's it. You have three pieces. If you're going smaller, you need to get a shorter belt. If you're going larger, you get a longer belt, and that's it. It's just that simple.
So, Bub, how do you as a designer then figure out what you want to do, in terms of where you want that bike to perform or where you want that car to perform?
That's all personal feeling. You know, if you get something, typically, like I said, when you get something out of the gate, especially today, manufacturers, mass production, they're to the T ready to go. It's all around. It gives you performance. It gives you cruise. It's like a dead in the middle of everything, kind of best of both worlds, whatever it is you want to call it. They're pre-built, pre-matched, pre-packaged, ready to go. You really don't dick with it. It's ready to go. Now, if you take, for example, let me pick a car. Let's go with a brand new Camaro. Okay. And you put on, let's say you took a naturally aspirated Camaro. You did a huge, massive motor build on this car. The car came factory with, say, 373 rear gear ratio. So if you do a massive motor build on this thing and you take a motor that was 450 horse and you get this thing up around 1,200, 1,300, that car is going to perform totally different with 1,300 horse in the same gear ratio versus 450 in the same gear ratio. So now you've got a car that's going to spool up hard if it's boosted, turbocharged, supercharged. It's going to spool up hard. First gear may be totally irrelevant because it's such a short gear for that naturally aspirated setup that all it's going to do is shred the tires off of it with that much horsepower going to it. So at that point, you'd want to lower that rear gear ratio down so that you can plant that power, draw that gear out a little bit more, and try to get that power down to the ground.
Interesting. Bud, and this is, I love the social media thing, man. You know, of course, we monitor everything that comes across, right? And I like when people cross promote and say hello to people. Erica Magazine says hello to Robin. So Robin, Erica Magazine is saying hello to you. I'm going to bring in, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Mark Hoffman for the race report. We haven't heard from him for a little bit. We're going to jump out of the segments, get the quick race report from Mark. Good morning, Mark. How are we doing today?
Oh, hanging in there. Just, it's obviously 9:20 a.m. and we're waiting to go to Potomac Speedway tonight for a makeup event.
Mark, right out of the gate, what's the weather up there in Maryland right now?
Easy, Sparky.
Well, it's been overcast, but at least it's dry. So that's
what's the temperature, man?
About 76.
Oh, so you're in perfect temperature for great power, though.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And something to add to your conversation about ratios, don't forget different tire sizes will throw the whole ratio.
Why don't you and Bud talk about that
too
for a second, then? What's you talking about there, Bob?
So, and that's actually a great, great, great point there, Mark, because for the people out there listening that may not have a full understanding of it, that's one thing I didn't even throw into the mix because I was doing it more based off of a power standpoint and a stock tire size, you know, not messing with tire size. But great point to that. If you do go with a smaller diameter tire and you do go with a larger diameter tire, a lot of guys do lifted trucks, for example, especially here in South Florida. Yeah. If you go from a 30-inch tire to a 40-inch tire, you've essentially slowed that rotation down. So you'll want to then speed it back up. So you'll go a higher number ratio to offset the difference in that tire size. So that's a great point to bring up right there too as well, Mark.
Good job, Mark. Thank you so much. That's why
not
the drive.
Not just that, but if you large size the tire to slow it down, you're also going to speed up your fuel consumption.
Correct.
Exactly right. That's very good, man. All things that you got to consider out there when you're doing these cars. That is why Mark is the BEM dirt track driver. He understands his stuff. And by the way, Bub, we'll be up in Newburgh, New York, doing some birthday celebrations with Mom's mom and at OCC headquarters. It's going to be cold October 19th. We're up there, aren't we?
Man, I'll tell you what, dude. We have a really, really booked up schedule here for the next, 4 weeks. And that on top of all the crazy rides we've got going on, I'll tell you what, man, I literally just did, if people notice, I just did an Instagram posting for the first time in probably 2 weeks. not that we haven't gotten work done at BEM. We've just been so overwhelmed that is how little time I have to even do the social media stuff.
It's crazy, man.
Well, here's something strange. One thing that your podcast has with our racing up here, okay, which is real strange, but it makes sense. Probably had one podcast in the past month, right?
Yes, it's been that busy, yep.
And that's pretty much how racing has been because it's done nothing but rain.
Isn't that interesting? See, and here it's just been so busy. And what we do now is we're using the Friday shows, putting them up as the Saturday podcast. So we can keep banging and moving and grooving down here. Mark, give us a quick race report there on the BEM dirt track team headed by Mr. Mark Hoffman and around the league.
The last time that we ran was, September 2nd, Labor Day. It was the final point race. We ended up starting sixth. And we, that car, the number 12, is on a limited schedule, so we weren't even running for points with it. But ended up destroying the throwout bearing.
Oh, Bud, what's a throwout bearing?
So that's right, because that's a manual transmission car, isn't it, Mark?
Yep, 3-speed, Saginaw.
That's it. I remember you telling me that.
What's a throw-out bearing, bud?
So throw-out bearing is on the end of – that's a manual setup if it's got a throw-out. Well, actually, no. Is that a hydraulic clutch setup on there with a throw-out bearing, or is that just like a clutch fork style design?
Clutch fork.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a manual style setup, old school system like Mark's saying. Your throw-out bearing is essentially just a bearing that rides on the fingers of the pressure plate itself on the clutch that allows you to engage and disengage while you're trying to shift gears, feather that clutch, maneuver that car around, and control what that car is doing in its power.
There it is.
Yep.
That's what
it is. And here's the other strange thing. Not just the throw-out bearing was shattered, but one of the springs inside the clutch popped out, too.
Yep.
And got all tore up.
Yep.
So
that's when you know you're rocking a lot of power
now.
Right there.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all repair that we're going to try it out tonight. And next week is our absolute final event at Potomac. It is the annual Southern Maryland Nationals 2-day event. And that will be it till March. And then a week from tomorrow, we're all free to take the car down to your shop.
Right on, right on. Well, it might be coming to a new facility, but we haven't released any of that yet, huh, Bob?
That's right.
Yeah, man.
Come on.
You can sit still and let the moss grow under your feet, or you can move forward, man, and keep burning tracks. Baby.
Yeah, well, I hope the new facility is back up this way so I don't have to go 10,000 miles down there. See you guys.
Hey, Mark, have you looked out your back window and seen that 30,000 square foot complex that's being erected? That's it, man.
Well, let's go. I'm ready.
Mark could be in the shop 24/7. What's going on around the NASCAR league right now, Mark?
Well, in the NASCAR league, they're in their playoffs now, and they had their first ever road course event at Charlotte this past week, which Ryan Blaney won, number 12, believe it or not, won that race at the inaugural Roval event.
Mm-hmm.
This week, let's see, NHRA is in Texas running the Fall Nationals. Go Erica Enders, so to speak. But other than that, we're just plugging along. There's two more demo Michigan Derby events that are makeup events coming up this month.
Bob and I need to talk to you about that and doing one of the Demolition Derby events with seniors. Do you have the dates for that? We may come up and have senior and the OCC crew meet us down there.
That will be October 27th in Upperco, Maryland.
October, what is the date?
Upperco, which is northeast of Baltimore, suburb of Baltimore.
Okay.
Carroll
All right.
County.
So make sure
Carroll
you get
County.
Me those dates. I'm going to see what's going
okay.
on. If we're not on the road, we're going to do that. So, Mark, we're going to jump out of this segment, jump into the next segment. Let's talk Monday. I think we're closing the shop down Monday.
That's right.
Yeah, we're going to talk because it's Columbus Day. Let's talk on Monday. I need to know more about those dates. Let me see what I can do. It's real busy here. Of course, as you know, here at OCC headquarters with everything we got going on. So I want to be able to get together and talk about that with you.
Here's the thing, though. Can you guys afford to close for a day with all these tens of thousands of projects going on?
That's the hardest thing about it. You have to use every minute, every second that you have at your disposal. So it's going to be a very
because
around
the
clock.
Will be the last day off before Thanksgiving weekend.
That's correct.
Oof,
that is correct.
We got a lot of stuff going on, Mark.
Yeah, we do.
Which is the annual rod run at Daytona. Swap meet.
That rod run at Daytona. Well, we won't be up there. In fact, I don't even think we were initially, Mark, so you'll know, we were going to do the preview and the release of the Senior Series choppers at SEMA this year. But because of the build schedule, we're pulling that back and moving it forward to the Exotics on Los Salas show, which is going to be a much bigger and more focused event. So that kind of gives you an idea of how quickly things have changed for us, man.
Well, I'm still game for SEMA, so.
I hear you, brother. We're reevaluating that now. So, Mark, we're going to jump out of this segment. Let's talk you and I on Monday. We appreciate you joining us, and we love you very much.
All right, I'll hit you up on your cell Monday.
Thank you, sir. Talk
see
to you
Mark.
Then. Bye-bye. Bub Cooling Systems, let's talk a little bit about them. There's an awful lot to them, man. You know, radiator caps were designed with springs in them and pressure and this, that, and the other. Talk a little bit about that, man.
Well, it's, you know, cooling systems are really, really, really sophisticated. And, you know, there are so many different components to it. You have pieces not only starting off your entry level, your hoses, rubber hoses and clamps. Some of these things now today is even turning into plastic molded hoses.
Yep.
You're also getting into, you know, you have thermostats, which are essentially something very simple, controls temperature. You also have your coolant, the fluid. You have the radiator itself. You have a heater core for inside the car that produces heat while you're driving. You have, let's see, what else do you have? You have control valves in there. You've got, you know, switches. You have relays. There are all kinds of things associated with the cooling system and the heater circuit. Water pump, what provides the flow of coolant. So there's so much, so many pieces and working parts that all have to work hand in hand to have an efficient setup.
Let's talk about, Bub, a little bit like a radiator cap. On a radiator cap, we see a spring and a plunger. Tell me a little bit about what those pieces are designed to do and why they were designed.
So it's, again, that's, you know, all these pieces and components have to work hand in hand with each other, and all these systems have to be essentially pressurized to a certain limit. These caps are pre-built and they are application specific. You don't go and just buy any radiator cap and shove it on because you think it fits. You
right.
buy caps that are specific for your system because they will be spring-loaded pressure to make your system operate at its peak efficiency, but then also have a safety relief valve in case something does go wrong.
So, Bub, what does the spring do? It releases pressure inside of the radiator. Is that correct?
Correct, if it needs to, yeah.
Okay, so if it needs to, that's not something it does every hour, every 10
no.
minutes, or every
so
5 minutes.
Its common purpose is to create pressure in the system. That is the common purpose.
So it's not really to release pressure out, it's to create pressure in.
Well, it holds the pressure in, but then also can release if it gets to either A, boiling point. You know, boiling points when it comes down to coolant and water mixtures. Those numbers vary depending on what your mixture ratio is and what coolant setup you have running from a fluid standpoint. So you have, you know, that spring pressure will also release not only to hold the pressure in the system and pressurize it, but also to allow for release of overflow, excessive heat, air pockets, things like that.
And Bub, one of the things I've learned too, as I was doing some research and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this, that pressure that you're talking about in the system, when you pressurize the system, you actually raise the boiling point.
That's right.
And the use of glycols and antifreezes and things like that also help raise the boiling point.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's so much to just fluids alone. That all of that comes down to specifics. Again, build for your application. You have to know what you're putting in it. A lot of companies, very important that you don't mix your antifreezes with what should not be in there. Some companies run, and I'm throwing basic terms out there, some companies will run orange antifreeze,
yep.
green antifreeze. They will run blue antifreeze, purple antifreeze, yellow antifreeze. So there's all different kinds of colors, and a lot of those cannot mix with each other. So you have to make sure you put in exactly what belongs there. Know what's in there, and if you don't, you definitely want to buy either an antifreeze that is capable of working with those or do a complete full flush of the entire system so you don't risk damaging anything by causing, you know, any sort of gelatin to form
yes.
by mixing two different compounds that can't work together.
So in other words, like a Dexcool and a straight and a standard ethylene glycol do not mix well together.
Not at all, no.
And they kind of create a gel in the system.
That's right.
And they'll clog
which
it.
Which slows it down, then it'll clog it eventually, and then eventually what you're going to have is overheating problems, efficiency, flow problems, and then you have to just go through and start replacing components because it's not coming out once it's in.
Right on, Bub. So, Bub, when you, as a builder, do you use any of the universal or the I'll mix with anything style antifreezes?
Very, very rare. You know, with anything that I do, I go all the way with it. I don't go 10%, I go 100%. So if there's maybe a vehicle that comes in the shop that just needs a small top up of antifreeze, maybe it's a modern newer vehicle, those things you can typically get away with a very small amount. If you need to, you can bump a little bit in there of essentially a universal, all makes and models antifreeze safe. coolant. You can pour some of that, and if you need to top it up just a little bit, even a small amount in the overflow bucket. But key factor there is, why are you having to put coolant in it anyways?
Yep.
So that's always your go-to source. Figure out why. But if you aren't aware, you don't know what's in that system, maybe it's super, super low, you've had to put a lot into it, you don't want to risk mixing the wrong things, do a full flush and put in exactly what should be.
You're a very precise builder. Good morning to Mickey Miller out there. Thank you for joining us on the number one rated internationally syndicated motorsports podcast brought to you in 4K Technologies. We're the only ones that did it. That's why NBC was talking about us this week, Bob. Let's see. Without any pressure on the water, it boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, Bob. However, a cooling system that is under 15 pounds of pressure, like you were just saying, will allow straight water to reach 250 degrees before it boils.
Which is a big difference. 212 to 250 is a really big difference, especially in hotter climates. You know, your average engine temps are going to be between 190 and 220. That's about average nowadays, especially on today's vehicles, all the aluminum style systems that are out there. Even higher than that, sometimes 225, 230 are normal operating temperatures, where once back in the day that was overheating standards.
Yeah.
So having the system pressurized and working at its peak efficiency is where you want it to be.
So, Bob, I guess what I don't understand from a layman's perspective is, you know, back in the day they'd want to run those cars at 180, 195 was the most you'd want to run that car, right, with the air conditioning on in hot weather.
Yeah, that's why a good temperature.
Why would you raise today's modern vehicles that dissipate heat better, okay, if heat would be – you've taught us before that heat is not what you want to build horsepower, correct? That's
right.
Not what you want, right?
Right.
Cars run better when they're cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if – why would the manufacturers be raising, or you as a designer, raise the temperatures of that vehicle's running condition, right? And you're using aluminums that dissipate heat better. Wouldn't you want to cool it down more?
Well, that's the key right there. So – you know, all metals have different temperature standards. So when you're mm-hmm. working with things back then that were, for example, all cast iron, cast block, cast heads,
yep.
You know, those would generate heat and get much hotter than, say, if you had 200 degrees of coolant inside. Sometimes that engine the material temperature, the block temperature, the head temperature could even get higher than that. It could rise even further. Today's materials are a aluminum setup, which is naturally much cooler. The aluminum does not hold heat anywhere near as long as cast did. It does not get as hot as the cast did. It still gets very hot. But that is a total offset in why you run more coolant temperature, higher temps now than you did back then, because the materials can handle that style temperature and they maintain that temperature. It doesn't keep rising.
So it's better. It's okay to run them at that temperature. You're still going to produce horsepower.
That's right.
Would you get more horsepower if you cooled that down a little bit?
Of course, yeah. You know, anytime you're working with, colder temps, you're getting better. Anytime you've got colder temps, you're going to have better efficiency, better performance.
But Bub, you may have to hit that Mevo back up there. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching, we're sorry. We just had a technical difficulty. It dropped off, as has happened. We're going to bring it right back up to you. So cooler temperatures, ladies and gentlemen, are much better than, say, higher temperatures. However, the manufacturers and people like Bob who do design work understand how thermodynamics work. And as such, they're able to put that to work for them in a very positive manner, thus producing horsepower every way across the board. And Bob, we're going to start talking about, once that comes back up, we're going to talk a little bit about rubber technologies, man, and evolution there. I'm sorry that crapped out on you, Bob. That's a shame that it's doing that. But we'll be right back up with it.
It says our SD card just failed.
Our SD card failed?
That's exactly what it just told me.
Yeah, well, we're back live again.
So yeah, screw it.
Screw it, Bob. But modern technologies and rubbers and things like that, man, it used to be things were just rubber. They were just rubber. Today they're using things like what they call them, Creighton polymers. They're using today they're using like Kratton polymers and things like that and this, that, and the other to bring rubber technologies forward. So motorcycle grips, Bob, tires, everything, they're moving forward with these new polymers. Talk to us about that. Tell us why. What's the advantage?
So it's everything, man. It's not just rubbers in terms of tires. It's in terms of, like you mentioned, grips. If you are working with motorcycle style applications, there's certain things you're looking for on that alone. You're looking for comfort. You're looking for, function. You're looking for reliability and longevity. So there's a certain blend of what you need to do from a compound standpoint that makes that work. and that makes it last and make it comfortable. All of those come into a key factor, and yeah, there's only one thing that you can find out from that, which is R&D, research and development, until you find the exact thing you're looking for.
And Bob, they're saying here, just to your point, not even tires are made of rubber as we used to know it. The same properties that make tires work thanks to thermoplastic rubber. Exactly what you're talking about there, Bob.
Right.
They're the same as to that. It makes grips tackier. It makes tires better. There's enough elastic base and thermoplastic rubbers for it to be called rubber, Bub, and that's how it continues to retain its name for that reason, it seems.
That's right.
So because it does have enough of the elasticity to retain the name of rubber, that's why they continue to call it rubber.
Yeah, you know, and it's, you know, everything about that has changed, not just from, like we just discussed a second ago, from a grip standpoint, but also from things like, you know, tires. So tires back in the day were considered bias fly tires. They were non-steel belted. When they were going to blow out, they were going to blow out. They were going to make a mess.
Oh,
and they were going to shred apart.
Oh, yeah.
Tires today have continued to evolve to not only where now they're considered radials, they've been considered radials for a very long time. But even then, that forward progression, again, of the rubber compound and materials like you're discussing has allowed us to get them much further than they could have ever imagined when they were bias plies back then. Now to a point where it's about water displacement, how water flows through that the tread pattern of the tires, so that you still, even on the rainiest of days, have as much of that tread touching the ground for the safest compact and ride.
Yeah.
But also from a softness standpoint, has to be hard to a limit, to where it doesn't wear down very fast, because as it rides across the roads, it's going to heat up and it's going to wear down fast. So you have to have a certain degree of hardness so that it lasts, but also a certain degree of softness so that it's comfortable and quiet. So all of these things have to skate a very fine line, and it's just about continually doing that R&D to well balance all these systems, whether they are on-road tires, track tires, off-road tires, all of that stuff takes into consideration.
Wow, crazy, Bob. And they're going on to say, just like you said, new materials have evolved and are available in more pure and durable varieties with fewer fillers. So they're not using the fillers that they used to use then, Bob.
Not at all, no.
And it is more, and to your point, the sidewalls are softer, they're more flexible, they're more durable, they're a lot better, aren't they, Bob?
Yeah.
It's a lot better stuff, man. What keeps going on over there, Bob?
I don't know, something failed. I think that's what happens when our SD card gets full.
But it shouldn't be, Bob. It should not be full, because there's only a few shows on that particular car.
Well,
right
look
now
at it. It's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not going to do it like the last show. I spent the whole entire show dicking with it.
Did you?
Yeah. So let's just keep going.
Let's keep on going, Bob. All right, Bob. So we'll just keep on moving here. Let's talk about, is softer really better in terms of rubber technologies, Bob, and elasticity? Is it better or not?
Well, this is where it gets good, because again, this is about building for that application. So you talk soft, you talk hard. When it comes to tire compounds, for example, that is where it's going to change everything that that vehicle or that application does, whether it's on road, whether it's off road, whether it's on a track, a road course, whether it is on a quarter mile drag strip, whether you are on the Autobahn, all of that stuff comes into play, and you want to make sure you have the right tire for the right application and what you're trying to do. Softer is going to get hot. It's going to get sticky. You're going to stick, you're going to plant power, you're going to have traction, you're going to go through corners, you're going to have handling, you're going to launch hard. So that is what a softer compound setup is going to do. Now, the con side to that, it's going to wear down extremely fast, because it is so soft and it is so sticky. It is going to leave a lot of that rubber on the asphalt where it's working.
And Bob, to your point, it does say the shorter answer is yes. Softness, softer rubbers dampen vibration and have a tackier feel.
That's right.
That's exactly.
But
right,
your lifespan gets cut extremely low. There are guys that can literally shred through tires if you are doing very, very high adrenaline motorsport style stuff. If you are out on the track, you can go through a set of tires in under an hour. Literally what most people can ride out for, keep this in mind, what most people can ride a set of tires for 10 plus, 20 plus years, of course, they'll be dry rotted, they'll be destroyed, they'll be falling apart, but the tire will still have its overall structure and lasting for good 10, 15 years sometimes, and they'll still work. They'll still be somewhat smooth, all about the way you drive them. There are guys that can go out to a track and they can destroy them depending on their compound and how soft they are. They can destroy a set in under an hour.
Interesting, interesting, interesting. Bub, if you can get them to come back, get us to come back up one time, I'll divert people over to iTunes so those who are watching will be able to just switch over to iTunes and hear what we're still continuing to talk about. There are a lot of different patterns, Bob, of course, when it comes to tires. Each one designed to do a specific duty, as you know. There are tires that displace mud, water, snow, all-season radials, drag radials. There's all kinds of different patterns and tread wear. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back up. We are back up with you, ladies and gentlemen. If we go down again, please go to iTunes and just type in Doing It Bubba Style. You'll hear us live. I'm sorry the video feed keeps falling out. That's not a problem here on our end. It's somewhere else, technically, not that it matters. But if you could join us on iTunes, we are right there. If the feed falls out again, just go to iTunes and type in Doing It Bubba Style. To bring you up to date, Bub was talking about the different tire compounds and rubber compounds, why softer is better in many cases, although you substitute some of your ride length. Bub, there are different compounds. There are snow displacement, water displacement, drag radials, all designed to do a specific thing and a specific job and a specific duty.
That's right.
So in your drag radials, Bub, are those a softer compound? Because they certainly stick.
Yeah, so drag radials, especially if they are a street-style drag radial, so it is still a DOT-approved tire because of how much thickness is on that rubber and what the tread pattern itself actually has. So you can legally run drag radial-style tires as long as they are a street-approved, DOT-approved tire. They can be run on the street, and you see, especially with today's high horsepower cars, you see a lot of guys running them. Again, they plant very hard, they plant very sticky, but that lifespan is not a long term on them, but it does give you the safest setup to plant a lot of power on today's street cars on street driving roads and conditions.
Right on, Bob. Very, very good. A lot of stuff to learn about on this. Like they're saying, what's the best grip to use, kind of grip pattern to use in the mud? And there's two schools of thought. Like you were saying, a hard compound has the firmest ridge, and even without mud will supply some traction. On the other hand, hard compounded tires are slicker than soft
That's right.
Compounded tires.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you're saying there. So you have to really kind of figure out, man, where you want to fall with this thing.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, a lot of these companies out of the gate, they give you that R&D is already done. It's tested. They don't just throw a cheap tire on there to get it out the door. They put on tires that work for what they've built and designed and as an all around. So it gives you a little bit of everything. So say, for example, you go and you want to buy a brand new dirt bike or a brand new four wheeler. Those companies, Yamaha, Polaris, Honda, yes, whoever it may be, have already pre-designed and pre-built that setup, and they chose the best tire for that application for what that bike is intended to do in a stock application form. Now, you get that thing, maybe a pro motocross rider just bought it. He may already know the tire that works for his ride style. So maybe it's a softer compound, maybe it's a harder, but he wants a brand new 250 or whatever it may be. He goes and he gets it, and he can run it on that new tire, see what it does, and he'll immediately, as a professional rider, feel what that tire is doing or not doing, and he'll know how to compensate for it or change it, go to a different tire and say, listen, I do need to go to a softer tire because this one's too firm, I'm starting to slip, versus grab traction through cornering or, you know, anything like that.
But jumping out of that and into a very good segment, thank you so much. I want to jump into, you were just touching on motocross or dirt bikes, Bub. The technologies have reached into them. Gone are the days of the two strokes for the most part, and the majority of them are four-stroke bikes. What's the difference between a two and a four-stroke bike?
So that's on the actual engine design. A two-stroke design would be a up-and-down system, essentially just moving up and down on a piston and the crank. Four-stroke would be four-stroke to do your full combustion cycle.
Which gives you more power, Bub?
That's a hard one to determine. It's they're very similar in power bands, but they're going to, or in power ratings, but totally different in power bands.
Right. Power bands, the two strokes have a power band that really comes on hard, man.
Real hard.
Oof. And you got to be ready to harness that power, but you've got to be able to live in that power range to get the bike to do what you want it to do.
Right.
And they are much more environmentally unfriendly because it is a two-stroke. They call them smokers, correct?
Correct.
They burn oil. It's not a pre-mixed separate system that you mix them yourself.
Right.
Correct. And Bub, today's bikes, we're seeing electric starts being put on them. And the big deal is, well, these electric starts weigh more than kick starts. And when in a motocross bike application, if you will, where 208 pounds is considered heavy or 20 pounds is considered heavy, every ounce counts, correct?
Right.
Today we're moving to fly-by-wire throttle grips, Bub, on motocross bikes and ECMs. What are your thoughts, man?
You know, it's good. You know, as long as it's something that's going to be functional and it can hold up through the environments, which I'm sure it can be, if all the R&D has been gone through and testing them, they're not just sticking a throttle or, you know, an electric throttle by wire on there just to see if it works. They've already tested it and gotten it soaked and made sure it's waterproofed.
Yep.
So it is good. There are pros and cons to it. There are guys that will like it. There are guys that won't like it.
Because you're talking about the two cable system, the roll on and roll off cable system that normally is there. But if you remove those cables, you reduce rate. And some of the things that manufacturers are talking about, usually you'll see major motocross, by the big four, you know, Honda, Suzuki, Yamaha, and Kawasaki change their model years about every 3 years. That's when the big design, evolution pushes every 3 years on them. Bub, what are you thinking about today's bikes using maps that you can use? You can actually come from the factory. You can change the map between three different positions. First of all, what's a map? Right there on the left handle grip, man.
You know, it's good. It's, you know, whenever you can have any sort of piece of technology that makes your ride safer, you know, that's good, you know, especially for guys that go out and they want to hit some trails. You know, it's crazy because when you're doing off-roading and trails, when it comes to like off-road, you know, motorsports stuff, the trails are not necessarily something you're going to see on your cell phone. So a lot of guys think you can pull out a cell phone and just use Google Maps and zoom in real close.
Yep.
That's not the case. You know, when you're working with trails, you actually have trail finders that are specific to your route. So you can go out and you can just let it rip all day long.
Yes.
You may find yourself 20 miles in somewhere and you have no idea what's around you or where you're going. So you can actually have these trail finders that will literally record your path driven. So if you do, for example, get lost, you can actually just drive your own path backwards.
Backwards, yeah.
And you'll come right back out where you went in.
Isn't it crazy what technology is
doing? And trust me, that is 100% needed when you do get off into off-roading.
It is, isn't it, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, you lose everything. No cell phone communication, nothing. When you're 10, 20 miles deep, you got to either wait for somebody else to come along that same path and hope that they have one, or you just kind of get stuck. That's it.
You're done. You're in there. So, Bub, now that's that with on computers and motorcycles. Bub, we have a few minutes left here. This is the subject I really wanted to get into you with: electric Porsches.
Yeah, I don't know about this.
Oh, man. So as we know, Bub, Porsche has done everything they can, much like Harley Davidson, to retain the factory sound like back in the day. So it sounded like the air-cooled pushrod engines.
Mm-hmm.
They put a lot of technology into it, a lot of thought into it. Like you, Porsche is a very forward-thinking company, Bub.
Yeah.
And they are saying by the year 2020 that there will be one of every two cars produced coming off of the assembly line will be electric cars.
Well, you know, it's not for me, but there's a whole entire audience and consumer out there ready to buy. You know, there's guys that love Porsches. There's also guys that I think the true enthusiasts love Porsches because of the sound of them.
Yep.
But there's also guys that love Porsches from a styling or a comfort or luxury or sportiness feel. And maybe there are guys that just want to be efficient and be, you know, go green, all electric. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. So I think that that's just a marketplace that if there's a buyer for it, they're going to be on it.
How about,
I'm just not one of those buyers.
I'm not either, Bub. How about today's Porsches now? They're using the floor pans as the batteries storage area now, right? Those cars are getting 310 miles to the charge, man.
Yeah, which is good. I mean, that's about your average fuel tank that you get.
Yep, that's my point.
And so it's pretty good. You know, when you can go on, you can go that distance without using any fuel and being that efficient. I mean, come on, you can't go wrong with that. The only thing you've got to do is have a plan A starting point and a plan B finishing point for charging that thing back up.
And what
That's
about
it.
And to beat that, Bub, to beat that, they're running two electric motors on the new 911s, one in the front and one in the back, man.
Yeah.
And it's planting 600 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds, man.
Yeah, it's pretty respectable. You know, again, there's going to be a marketplace and an entire line of consumers out there ready to buy. Because of that, just that efficiency of it, the fact that you're saving on the fuel, the fact that you don't have those costs. There are guys that don't want to hurt the environment and they do want to own a Porsche style ride. You know, again, you just have to have a marketplace for everybody.
It's certainly very quiet. And, you know, Porsche, you know, who better than to go? We saw them transition from air-cooled motors to water-cooled motors. We saw Harley-Davidson reach across the table to them in the development of the V-Rod motorcycle, because what better to go from air-cooled to water-cooled than Porsche, the professionals, you know, the designers, the innovators.
Yeah,
their CEOs, Porsche's always forward thinking. So their CEOs, Bub, are the younger crew who have their hands around this technology, much like you do. And it's crazy to see what they're literally starting to do with this stuff. And they're, by the way, they're passionate about making it happen.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. It's insane. As I read through some of this stuff, how about the new Porsche Park Assist, Bub? The remote Park Assist. Based on a small assistance system like parking spot search, a feature that detects and highlights suitable parking spots when driving past them. All the driver has to do is stop and activate the remote park assist. Whether the parking space is located on the left or right of the street, whether it's parallel parking spot or at a right angle, whether for the latter, the car needs to be parked forward or in reverse, it's all achieved with the simple tap of your finger as the system presses and goes on about its way.
Well, I think it's, you know, that's something that's been in the making for quite a few years. And, you know, Mercedes, I think, was one of the earlier models that came out with that, you know, self-automated parking. I think it's good. You know, I think there are a lot of people out there that don't know how to park worth a crap.
Agreed.
But I also, at one point in time, there's still a part of me that says, I feel like you should know how to park your own car. So it's kind of like a pro con, give and take a little bit there, you know, like don't rely too much on the car to do all the work for you. You should still have some sort of idea or control of how to park your own car. If your car's got it, I mean, yeah, sure. Pull up, push a button. I don't know.
You don't even have to be in the car anymore, Bob.
I know. You can do it straight from your remote. Would I take advantage of that? I don't know if I ever would, even if one of my cars had it.
You can even download an app on your phone.
I just naturally probably park the car. That would be me.
It's funny. We were out to dinner last night, and this guy in this Cadillac, there was a Cadillac in the parking spot. The guy in another Cadillac spots this Cadillac, and I guess he wants to form this Cadillac brotherhood, and pulls right up next to it and literally parks door to door with this guy, and then tries to get out, leaving a whole bunch of room on the other side of the parking spot. By the way, there was nobody in those five spots next to him, okay? But he has to squeeze in and literally bangs his door against his black Cadillac. It's a new CTS Cadillac he's parked next to. I'm thinking, bro, you can't take a second to straighten yourself up in the spot?
Yeah, I know.
How about the people that pull in their big SUVs and want to park right up front next to the smaller cars, and they pull in the parking spot and leave the wheel crank all the way to the right or to the left, can't even straighten it out, and then right on top the white line when they get out of the car.
Well, they're in such a rush to do whatever the heck it is they're trying to do. That's not me. Me, I'm the kind of guy that it's parking's not my I don't let myself get upset over it. I don't get frustrated over it. I'll go to the very, very last spot in the back of the parking lot, and I'll just pick a spot. I don't care if there's 20 more spots open. I'll just go all the way back there, and I'll park at the end, and I'll get out, and I'll walk. I'm not a lazy person.
Nope.
I'll enjoy my walk, and I won't have to worry about coming out and being frustrated with some other guy.
That's exactly right. That's what I do, too. I park at the very back.
You purposely park next to guys so you can get into fights.
Do I?
You actually do. It's kind of bad.
I kind of win them, too.
Yeah.
How about that, Bob?
Not really, because you complain that you've got milkshakes thrown on your car, that you have crap shoved into your wheels.
Yeah.
This is all true.
You can't deny it. It was hard to get the crap between the wheels, though, Bob.
Well, you kind of did it to yourself.
How about that, Bob?
Yeah.
How about that, huh? Oh, Bob. When I'm gone, I want to marry our neighbor, Buzzard on his deathbed said to his old lady. Why our neighbor, his wife asked. You've hated him all your life. Still do.
Uh-huh.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah, I don't get it.
You wish the best for the worst for your friends, man, that you don't like, or wish the worst for people that you don't like the least, right?
All right, I got to go, man. We got a lot of work I got to do. I got some crazy things going on here at BE. I'm still finishing up two more designs. I've got to have them done in the next 5 minutes somehow.
That's not going to happen, Bob.
It's going to happen. I get things done.
Yeah, how about that?
So you guys stay tuned for all of our Instagram stuff. If you haven't gone out and followed it, go to bubbasexoticmotorsports.com, and you scroll down on that website on the left-hand side lower corner. You will see all of our social media feeds out there, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram. All of those are out there. You click on them and you will literally go directly to the subscribe button so that it does make it easy for you. And anytime that we have, whether it's the hottest product releases in the industry, the auto industry, whether it's parts online, massive sales, sneak peeks, releases, behind the scenes things going on here at BEM. All of that will go live in your pocket and you'll get the first updates.
But we just want to let everybody know, stay up with us on Instagram, like you're saying. It is where all our social media is. It's where everything is taking place. We're keeping everybody informed. Look for some great big things to continue to come from here at Bubba's Exotic Motorsports. We will not let you people down.
Right.
Bub, until next Friday when we'll see you live on the number one rated internationally syndicated motorsports show, and we may be coming from a new location. Until then, Bub.
Just keep on doing it, Bubba style.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's reach out to touch matter today. Let's open the door for somebody whose hands are full. Let's feed somebody who's standing on the corner with a sign that says, "We'll work for food. I'm a vet. Need help." You know, right across the street is a Sitco or 7-Eleven. It's cheaper than your designer cup of coffee for a protein drink and a power bar. And if they have holes in the bottom of their shoes, ladies and gentlemen, give them a pair of yours out of the trunk. Until next Friday, ladies and gentlemen, let's keep on doing it. Bubba style.